Chapter 2. The Venerable Timofey Semyonich met me rather nervously, as though somewhat embarrassed. He led me to his tiny study and shut the door carefully. "That the children may not hinder us," he added with evident uneasiness. There he made me sit down on a chair by the writing-table, sat down himself in an easy chair, wrapped around him the skirts of his old wadded dressing-gown, and assumed an official and even severe air, in readiness for anything, though he was not my chief nor Ivan Matveitch's, and had hitherto been reckoned as a colleague and even a friend. "First of all," he said, "take note that I am not a person in authority, but just such a subordinate official as you and Ivan Matveitch. I have nothing to do with it, and do not intend to mix myself up in the affair." I was surprised to find that he apparently knew all about it already. In spite of that, I told him the whole story over in detail. I spoke with positive excitement, for I was at that moment fulfilling the obligations of a true friend. He listened without special surprise, but with evident signs of suspicion. "Only fancy," he said. "I always believed that this would be sure to happen to him." "Why, Timofey Semyonich, it is a very unusual incident in itself."
"I admit it. But Ivan Matveitch's whole career in the service was leading up to this end. He was flighty, conceited indeed. It was always progress and ideas of all sorts, and this is what progress brings people to."
"But this is a most unusual incident, and cannot possibly serve as a general rule for all progressives."
"Yes, indeed it can. You see, it's the effect of over-education, I assure you. For over-education leads people to poke their noses into all sorts of places, especially where they are not invited. Though, perhaps you know best," he added, as though offended. "I am an old man, and not of much education. I began as a soldier's son, and this year has been the jubilee of my service."
"Oh no, Timofey Semyonich, not at all. On the contrary, Ivan Matveitch is eager for your advice. He is eager for your guidance. He implores it, so to say, with tears."
"So to say, with tears. Those are crocodile's tears, and one cannot quite believe in them. Tell me, what possessed him to want to go abroad, and how could he afford to go? Why, he has no private means."
"He has saved the money from his last bonus," I added plaintively. "He only wanted to go for 3 months, to Switzerland, to the land of William Tell."
"William Tell?
"He wanted to meet the spring at Naples, to see the museums, the customs, the animals."
"The animals. I think it was simply from pride. What animals? Animals, indeed. Haven't we animals enough? We have museums, menageries, camels. There are bears quite close to Petersburg. And here he's got inside a crocodile himself."
"Oh, come, Timofey Semyonich, the man is in trouble. The man appeals to you as a friend, as to an older relation, craves for advice, and you reproach him. Have pity at least on the unfortunate Yelena Ivanovna."
"You are speaking of his wife, a charming little lady," said Timofey Semyonich, visibly softening, and taking a pinch of snuff with relish. "Particularly prepossessing, and so plump, and always putting her pretty little head on one side. Very agreeable. Andrei Osipitch was speaking of her only the other day."
"Speaking of her?"
"Yes, and in very flattering terms. Such a bust, he said, such eyes, such hair. A sugar plum, he said, not a lady. And then he laughed. He is still a young man, of course."
Timofey Semyonich blew his nose with a loud noise.
"And yet Young though he is, what a career he is making for himself.
That's quite a different thing, Timofey Semyonitch.
Of course, of course.
Well, what do you say then, Timofey Semyonitch?
Why, what can I do?
Give advice, guidance, as a man of experience, a relative. What are we to do? What steps are we to take? Go to the authorities and—
To the authorities? Certainly not,
Timofey Semyonitch replied hurriedly.
If you ask my advice, you had better, above all, hush the matter up, and act, so to speak, as a private person. It is a suspicious incident, quite unheard of. Unheard of, above all. There is no precedent for it, and it is far from creditable. And so, discretion above all. Let him lie there a bit. We must wait and see.
But how can we wait and see, Timofey Semyonitch? What if he is stifled there?
Why should he be? I think you told me that he made himself fairly comfortable there.
I told him the whole story over again. Timofey Semyonitch pondered. He said, twisting his snuff-box in his hands.
To my mind, it's really a good thing he should lie there a bit instead of going abroad. Let him reflect at his leisure. Of course, he mustn't be stifled, and so he must take measures to preserve his health, avoiding a cough, for instance, and so on. And as for the German, it's my personal opinion he is within his rights, and even more so than the other side, because it was the other party who got into his crocodile without asking permission, and not he who got into Ivan Matveitch's crocodile without asking permission, though, as far as I recollect, the latter has no crocodile. And a crocodile is private property, and so it is impossible to slit him open without compensation.
For the saving of human life, Timofey Semyonitch.
Oh, well, that's a matter for the police. You must go to them.
But Ivan Matveitch may be needed in the department. He may be asked for.
Ivan Matveitch needed? Besides, he is on leave so that we may ignore him. Let him inspect the countries of Europe. It will be a different matter if he doesn't turn up when his leave is over. Then we shall ask for him and make inquiries.
3 months! Timofey Semyonitch, for pity's sake!
It is his own fault. Nobody thrust him there. At this rate, we should have to get a nurse to look after him at government expense, and that is not allowed for in the regulations. But the chief point is that the crocodile is private property, so that the principles of economics apply in this question, and the principles of economics are paramount. Only the other evening, at Luka Andreevich's, Ignaty Prokofievich was saying so. Do you know Ignaty Prokofievich, a capitalist in a big way of business, and he speaks so fluently? We need industrial development, he said. There is very little development among us. We must create it. We must create capital. So we must create a middle class, the so-called bourgeoisie. And as we haven't capital, we must attract it from abroad. We must, in the first place, give facilities to foreign companies to buy up lands in Russia, as is done now abroad. The communal holding of land is poison, is ruin. And you know, he spoke with such heat. Well, that's all right for him, a wealthy man and not in the service. Within the communal system, he said, there will be no improvement in industrial development or agriculture. Foreign companies, he said, must, as far as possible, buy up the whole of our land in big lots, and then split it up, split it up, split it up in the smallest parts possible. And you know, he pronounced the words split it up with such determination. And then sell it as private property, or rather not sell it, but simply let it. When, he said, all the land is in the hands of foreign companies, they can fix any rent they like, and so the peasant will work three times as much for his daily bread, and he can be turned out at pleasure, so that he will feel it, will be submissive and industrious, and will work three times as much for the same wages. But as it is with the commune, what does he care? He knows he won't die of hunger, so he is lazy and drunken. And meanwhile, money will be attracted into Russia, capital will be created, and the bourgeoisie will spring up. The English political and literary paper, The Times, in an article the other day on our finances, stated that the reason our financial position was so unsatisfactory was that we had no middle class, no big fortunes, no accommodating proletariat. Ignaty Prokofievich speaks well. He is an orator. He wants to lay a report on the subject before the authorities, and then to get it published in the news. That's something very different from verses like Ivan Matveitch's. But how about Ivan Matveitch? I put in, after letting the old man babble on. Timofey Semyonitch was sometimes fond of talking and showing that he was not behind the times, but knew all about things.
How about Ivan Matveitch? I am coming to that. Here we are, anxious to bring foreign capital into the country, and only consider, as soon as the capital of a foreigner who has been attracted to Petersburg has been doubled through Ivan Matveitch, instead of protecting the foreign capitalist, we are proposing to rip open the belly of his original capital, the crocodile. Is it consistent? To my mind, Ivan Matveitch, as the true son of his fatherland, ought to rejoice and to be proud that through him the value of a foreign crocodile has been doubled, and possibly even trebled. That's just what is wanted to attract capital. If one man succeeds, mind you, another will come with a crocodile, and a third will bring two or three of them at once, and capital will grow up about them. There you have a bourgeoisie. It must be encouraged.
"'Upon my word, Timofey Semyonitch,' I cried, "'you are demanding almost supernatural self-sacrifice from poor Ivan Matveitch.
"'I demand nothing, and I beg you before everything, as I have said already, "'to remember that I am not a person in authority, and so cannot demand anything of anyone. "'I am speaking as a son of the fatherland.' That is, not as the son of the fatherland, but as a son of the fatherland. Again, what possessed him to get into the crocodile? A respectable man, a man of good grade in the service, lawfully married, and then to behave like that? Is it consistent?
But it was an accident.
Who knows? And where is the money to compensate the owner to come from?
Perhaps out of his salary, Timofey Semyonitch.
Would that be enough?
No, it wouldn't, Timofey Semyonitch, I answered sadly. The proprietor was at first alarmed that the crocodile would burst, but as soon as he was sure that it was all right, he began to bluster and was delighted to think that he could double the charge for entry.
Treble and quadruple, perhaps. The public will simply stampede the place now, and crocodile owners are smart people. Besides, it's not Lent yet, and people are keen on diversions. And so I say again, the great thing is that Ivan Matveitch should preserve his incognito. Don't let him be in a hurry. Let everybody know, perhaps, that he is in the crocodile, but don't let them be officially informed of it. Ivan Matveitch is in particularly favourable circumstances for that, for he is reckoned to be abroad. It will be said he is in the crocodile, and we will refuse to believe it. That is how it can be managed. The great thing is that he should wait. And why should he be in a hurry?
Well, but if—
Don't worry. He has a good constitution.
Well, and afterwards, when he has waited?
Well, I won't conceal from you that I think the case is exceptional in the highest degree.
One doesn't know what to think of it. And the worst of it is there is no precedent. If we had a precedent, we might have something to go by. But as it is, what is one to say? It will certainly take time to settle it."
A happy thought flashed upon my mind. "Cannot we arrange," I said, "that if he is destined to remain in the entrails of the monster, and it is the will of Providence that he should remain alive, that he should send in a petition to be reckoned as still serving?"
Possibly on leave and without salary.
But couldn't it be with salary?
On what grounds?
As sent on a special commission.
What commission, and where?
Why, into the entrails, entrails of the crocodile, so to speak, for an exploration, for investigation of the facts on the spot. It would, of course, be a novelty, but that is progressive, and would at the same time show zeal for enlightenment.
Timofey Semyonich thought a little.
"To send a special official," he said at last, "to the inside of a crocodile to conduct a special inquiry is, in my personal opinion, an absurdity. It is not in the regulations. And what sort of special inquiry could there be there?
The scientific study of nature on the spot, in the living subject. The natural sciences are all the fashion nowadays. Botany, he could live there and report his observations, for instance, concerning digestion, or simply habits, for the sake of accumulating facts."
"You mean as statistics? Well, I am no great authority on that subject. Indeed, I am no philosopher at all. You say facts. We are overwhelmed with facts as it is, and don't know what to do with them. Besides, statistics are a danger."
"In what way?"
"They are a danger. Moreover, you will admit he will report facts, so to speak, lying like a log. And can one do one's official duties, lying like a log? That would be another novelty, and a dangerous one. And again, there is no precedent for it. If we had any sort of precedent for it, then to my thinking, he might have been given the job."
"But no live crocodiles have been brought over hitherto, Timofey Semyonich."
Yes," he reflected again. "Your objection is a just one, if you like, and might indeed serve as a ground for carrying the matter further. But consider again that if with the arrival of living crocodiles, government clerks begin to disappear, and then, on the ground that they are warm and comfortable there, expect to receive the official sanction for their position, and then take their ease there, you must admit it would be a bad example. We should have everyone trying to go the same way to get a salary for nothing."
"Do your best for him, Timofey Semyonich. By the way, Ivan Matveitch asked me to give you 7 rubles he had lost to you at cards."
"Ah, he lost that the other day at Nikifor Nikiforich's, I remember. And how gay and amusing he was. And now?"
The old man was genuinely touched.
"Intercede for him, Timofey Semyonich."
"I will do my best. I will speak in my own name, as a private person, as though I were asking for information. And meanwhile, you find out indirectly, unofficially, how much would the proprietor consent to take for his crocodile?"
Timofey Semyonich was visibly more friendly.
"Certainly," I answered, "and I will come back to you at once to report."
"And his wife? Is she alone now? Is she depressed?"
"You should call on her, Timofey Semyonich."
"I will. I thought of doing so before. It's a good opportunity. And what on earth possessed him to go and look at the crocodile? Though indeed I should like to see it myself."
"Go and see the poor fellow, Timofey Semyonich."
"I will. Of course, I don't want to raise his hopes by doing so. I shall go as a private person. Well, goodbye. I am going to Nikifor Nikiforich's again. Shall you be there?"
No, I am going to see the poor prisoner.
Yes, now he is a prisoner.
Ah, that's what comes of thoughtlessness.
I said goodbye to the old man. Ideas of all kinds were straying through my mind. A good-natured and most honest man, Timofey Semyonitch. Yet, as I left him, I felt pleased at the thought that he had celebrated his 50th year of service, and that Timofey Semyonitches are now a rarity among us. I flew at once, of course, to the arcade to tell poor Ivan Matveitch all the news, and indeed I was moved by curiosity to know how he was getting on in the crocodile, and how it was possible to live in a crocodile, and indeed was it possible to live in a crocodile at all. At times it really seemed to me as though it were all an outlandish, monstrous dream, especially as an outlandish monster was the chief figure in it.